C1G.
Number 5A.
Now we come to the 7 days of creation. And as I said, true text interpretation must always go out from the whole and first have the overall tone and see the overall subject. We first now run quickly through the symbolism of the 7 days of creation so that we have a present knowledge of the symbols that are used in each day of creation. And for that, you can take the Appendix 1, which you have in front of you. So Appendix 1 on the left-hand side gives us the overall symbol for each day. So the first day of creation in the Bible is "Let there be light." So you can see at once it is a symbol of the divine mind. The second day has the main symbol of "Let there be a firmament." And the firmament, we know from the definition in the glossary that it has to do with spirit, the separation process. Spirit is always that which separates opposites and gives a firm understanding, a firm stand understanding. The third day of creation is seen in two symbols that are necessary. The first one is "Let the dry land appear." And the dry land is something very concrete. It gives the sense of the identity of soul. And there is a second symbol, namely the seed within itself. Again, a symbol for the identity of soul, but in a different connotation. So let's keep in mind, as we go on, you really should right away assimilate the main ideas and the main symbols. First day is light, mind. Second day is firmament, understanding, spirit. The third day has two different symbols. Why? We will see later on when we go back, about next Wednesday, where we go back over all those 7 days of creation, and then you should remember that there are two very different symbols, and we will see why we need them. So it is the dry land, the seed within itself. Both are ideas of soul. The fourth day, we have the light, namely the sun, the moon, and the stars. Is therefore a symbol of the heavenly government principle. In the fifth day, it's the day "Let there be fish and fowl," given a sense of the multiplication of life. Then the sixth day is the day of the animals and men, giving a sense of truth, the compound idea man, truth. Then the seventh day is the day of where creation is finished and fulfilled. Love is always fulfillment. So these are the symbols that are used, and I think we should be able to remember them without constantly looking on this study material. Now, what does it mean? Why are the days of creation built up that way? As mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Can you see what Mrs. Eddy did and what John Dorley brought to light? Here is the record of creation that always attracted all the thinkers in the world, all the Christian theologians in the world, the Jews, Jewish theology. And always there was a sense that it would give some kind of an explanation of how the universe came into being. Therefore, they took it first as a material theory of evolution. Then at the end of last century, especially with the time of Darwin, it was discarded and said this cannot be true. Then later on it was discarded anyway as a funny story or as a saga or a creation myth, etc. Then when they discovered really the atom and the Big Bang theory, they began to think there may be something just the same. So the great physicists were reconsidering the days of creation, were feeling, no, I think this is all right. There was actually light before there was a sun. See, this was always the great issue, just as Mrs. Eddy takes it up and says, how can there be light in the first day when the sun was only created in the fourth day? But today this is no question, because they know everything started with the Big Bang, and that was a terrific light, that was a terrific explosion, and only after some billion of years the solar system formed itself, so that could have been quite easy to be explained. And therefore the atom physicists begin to gain a wonder if that theory of story of creation is not really a true story. So the interpretation of the of natural science vacillated to and fro. The interpretation also of the theologian then somehow vacillated to and fro. But actually, no matter if even the natural scientist would find some kind of a parallel with the days of creation, I don't know how they would explain really the third day before the fourth day, that there was herb and thorn on the earth before there was sun. That I don't know either. You can see these are all false questions. Trying to take a spiritual symbolism, or let me say a symbolism for a spiritual law, and to take the symbolism for actual reality. That's always the great danger, that one takes a symbol for reality. So actually we do not be concerned with any of these interpretations, because Mrs. Eddy for the first time gave a scientific spiritual interpretation of the law of creativity and not of how the material universe came into existence. But then, even then, when one considers it as symbols, still there was that great problem to be solved. What do these symbols actually symbolize? And therefore, Mrs. Eddy was the first one to give to these symbols a metaphysical interpretation. Therefore, the original meaning of what the writers of the Bible wanted to bring out. And so we must see that these biblical symbols really want to explain fundamentally nothing else but the definition of God, that says God is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. If we see these seven in a irresistible order, and not just as seven statements. If we see them in a logical, irresistible, irreversible order, then we have found the law of creativity. And this was the work of John Dorley, that he pointed out, actually, that this order is a fundamental order that coincides with the definition of God. That was his contribution. He got it out of the textbook, but first one has to see it in the textbook. And thereby really opened up a complete new vista on the Bible as a whole. Therefore, we can quickly run through the seven big stages in the metaphysical or in the scientific explanation. So if you take page 3 of the study material, page 3, and there on page 3, you have the first record of creation, and the main ideas of the 7 days are printed out in bold letters. And so we first want to go quickly through those epitomes of the seven synonymous terms that are written out in bold face. To say bold face or bold letters, bold face. Therefore, we look away from the biblical symbols and take now the more abstract ideas of science. And there I have written first as an overall theme for the whole record of creation, love and mind. What is love and mind? Love and mind says love embraces its own perfect creation. You see, love that embraces what? Mind is the creation of mind, because mind creates all in ideas. So what is being brought out is that love, the motherhood of God, includes within itself the ever-going on of mind's creation. It gives a real sense of a matrix sense that creation goes on within God's embrace, so that actually we could also say what is presented here is a God Genesis, namely the generating sense of how God presents himself as what he is. And this would be the highest sense of the days of creation. Just to see that within the infinite one, on the level of science itself, goes on an eternal generation of the nature of God, God presenting himself to himself always in the word order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. What does it mean? And I run now through those bold-faced sentences. First, we start out from mind. Mind manifests itself as what? As a creation of ideas. So can you see the very beginning must be of a record of creation, that there is a creator. What is that creator? That creator is mind. How does he create? He creates only his own nature, namely ideas. He does not create the material universe. He does not create the people universe. He does not create the sinful universe. The inner nature of mind is that mind says, I manifest myself as a creation of ideas. So we could say, well, and we have a creation of ideas, so what? Well, it is not enough. There, it's needed that we see Spirit. Spirit, we have here imparts the understanding which now distinguishes between the real and the unreal. So we can see that the second step is that step which says that what mind has created, that is the only reality. And that must be distinguished from that which is not created by mind, because that is unreality. And therefore the second step is always following the first step by showing that what mind created is set apart from everything else, and that setting apart means to make a distinction, to make a separation, and that is the tone of spirit. Spirit is that understanding which can draw the line of demarcation between the real and the unreal. So that at the second step we know now that we have to turn to mind, and that is soul is a further step, a third step. Soul bestows on every idea definable, unchanging, and self-reproducing identity. You know soul as that which is definable, which has identity, which is unchanging, which reproduces itself, which has the seed within itself. That's the tone of soul. Now, why do we need that? Wouldn't it have been enough, really, to have mind and spirit? Well, if we only would have that, something would be missing. We may waver in our understanding. And therefore, a third one is necessary, that's a stage of soul, which says, and that which mind has created, and which is completely separate from any exterior or ulterior reality or existence, that has unchangeable existence, unchangeable identity. That does no more alter. That remains what it is. That's the immortality of soul, the definiteness of soul. And in this way, you have really found a basis, a true, reliable basis. Principle comes in and says, is it necessary for another stage? Is it not enough that we have a creation of unchangeable identities? And we would say, yes, there is something very important missing. Namely, these identities must, if they want to show the one God, they must have relationship with each other. They must be related and intra-related. They must be governed by one central principle. Or they are isolated identities and they never work together. They may even be contrary to each other or have friction among them. And so principle comes in and says, no, all those identities of being are related and interrelated and governed by one central principle. There is only one principle governing. So you have principle, unites all identities into a system of ideas, into a system, into harmony. At that point, thought could say, well, isn't that enough? Wouldn't we be happy with that? Wouldn't we be happy that there is only one principle governing all ideas? And somehow, after a while, thought would say, this is boring. Just have always one principle and just a relationship to ideas, that's boring. I want to see that principle always brings forth something new, the newness of life. And so the next idea must be life, because life is what? life individualizes infinitely through the multiplication of ideas. Can you see it's not always the same old thing going on in principle, but through a principle, really, we can rearrange the relationship of the ideas of principle, and by restructuring what is there in that system of principle, by restructuring, we individualize the system and we bring out constantly another relationship, another structure, and so there is no end to the restructuring or to the individualization of that principle. That is why principle never repeats itself, and that's life. And life is that which says principle never repeats itself. It multiplies and multiplies and brings forth the individuality of that principle, so that we have never a repetition. Therefore, no one is equal to the other, no one can do the job of the other, no one can compete with the other, and yet still everyone can fall back to the same principle. Then we could say, well, that's fine, that principle constantly has within itself the ability to restructure itself and bring forth individualized ideas, always new ideas. Isn't that enough? And after a while, thought would say, no, it needs something more. It needs the consciousness of that whole creative sense. We must be conscious of what happens in mind, spirit, soul, principle, life. Without being conscious, we are not taking part in it. We are not aware of it, and therefore another great aspect or office in being is truth, consciousness of its own nature. So the sixth day of creation brings in man, and we know man is the only symbol that they could find for consciousness, because the plants at that time didn't seem to have consciousness, the animals at that time they felt had no consciousness. Today it's a bit different. Today one can prove that plants have some kind of a feeling and consciousness. But the real scientific consciousness is only symbolized through man, through man's consciousness. So that's why they took man as a symbol. For what? For something much bigger than to describe man. Namely, to show that truth is conscious of itself as its own perfect creation. So that it says, what is actually here truth? Truth is saying, I'm conscious of the first day, second day, third day, fourth day, and fifth day. If I am conscious of those five first days, then I have dominion over them. And so you have man having dominion, meaning nothing else, that truth consciousness, no matter if we introduce the term man or not, is dominion. That's the nature of truth. So when we arrive at that point, we feel, well, what is there more that can be done? And actually thought would say, actually, not more can be done. So the creative ability goes only up to the sixth day, but still there is a further stage, which is not the creative stage. The seventh day is a stage of rest, namely that stage where we become conscious, through that consciousness become conscious that actually everything is at the point of perfection. That actually everything is at the point of being and no more of becoming. And therefore we have the convergence of those two great strains, that we have discovered that being and becoming, they must somehow be reconciled, they must come together into one. And that is what happens in the seventh day. In the seventh day, through the ascending awareness of the creative process, that creative process, we arrive finally at a state where something within us says, actually everything is fulfilled. And that's the seventh day. Love is fulfilled in its own creation. That will be the seventh. That will be the day of rest. Yes. So, in this way, we can see that those seven synonymous terms, as long as we use them for a creative process, namely as the Word of God, that they show an irresistible but also an irreversible order. That is a logical order. Everything therefore must start first, as we have here, with ideas. These are the building stones of creation. These ideas must be seen to be the only reality in spirit, so that we do not mix them up with human concepts. Then we must see that these realities are unchangeable realities in soul, so that we can rely on it. Then principle must come along and say, and these identities are all related to each other, so that they form a consistent system. Once you have the system, you can say, now I'm going to apply that system. Life therefore shows the individual multiplication, that everyone can go back to the same system in its own individual way, so that it is individualized, showing that if we understand that process, that we are a master of it, that we have dominion over creation, the sixth day, and if we feel we have dominion over it, there comes the day of rest, where we feel actually that it has always been there. I have nothing created, nothing had to be brought into existence. Everything existed from time immemorial.